Get to the book of Judges. The book of Judges is that will be our text for tonight. Mark that as we will view a couple of other passages before we enter into that text. Over the next couple weeks, at some point, I'm going to be starting a small series on the subject of premillennialism, and that will cover a number of aspects of end times, but I do think that the specific focus on premillennialism as a false teaching is important. Is whatever we listen to, if we listen to things religiously or read religiously, it is very likely that we will come across some component, some aspect of premillennialism. If you don't know, what is premillennialism, what is it all about, join us. Starting probably next Sunday night, we'll have a few lessons that will deal with that subject. But before we get to that, tonight I want to talk about a question. There are the big questions that people ask in life. Why am I here? How did I get here? Where am I going? And those are very philosophical in their nature. And I would also identify that there are some questions that are more practical in their nature. There are questions that a number of people, if not all people, at some point in their life will ask. And I want to deal with one of those questions tonight in a character study within the book of Judges. As we go through life, the Bible is clear, and experience is clear that there will be times that each and every one of us as individuals will face difficulties, we will face struggles, we will face difficult times. The purpose for those times is varied. And we can look and we can see there's a number of reasons why those things might occur in our lives, the number of purposes that can be achieved. James chapter 1 sums it up clearly when it says, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing the trial of your faith works patience. And that is the ultimate goal of any trial that we encounter. So while there might be a number of different purposes and one major purpose that can be attained through struggles, the source of struggles is rather limited. In fact, as I look at it, I think there are only three causes of struggles in life. There are those struggles that God allows or that God causes. In Mark chapter 4, beginning at verse 35, Jesus sends his disciples onto the other side, and there is a great windstorm that arose, and waves were breaking into the boat, so that the boat was filling, and he was in the stern asleep on the cushion, and they woke him, and they said, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And the wind ceased. Here's a situation that the disciples found themselves in on the Sea of Galilee, and we'd ask the question, what caused that storm? Well, that storm was caused by God. One of the reasons why God allows struggles into our lives is so that we may stop and take account and examine our lives, our strength, and our faith as it stands in relationship to God. And so there are struggles that God allows to come into our lives that we might say he is the source. Not temptations, but struggles. Then there are struggles that other people might cause. As Braden read for us in Acts chapter 16 and verse 19 through verse 24, the subject there being Paul and Silas when they're in Philippi, and there's a servant girl who is possessed, and she has the ability to speak and to speak future and to speak of special things, followed Paul and Silas around. And so Paul became tired of what this spirit was doing, and so he cast it out. But the people who made money off of her were upset. So what did they do? They took Paul, they took Silas, and they had them beat. And after they were beat, they had them thrown into prison. Well, reason for those kinds of struggles, you know, one reason is that we might learn about the strength of our faith. Can my faith withstand the onslaught of persecution from people that are around me? And so, in one sense, we have struggles that God allows. We have struggles that are brought on to us by others because of our faith. And then there are struggles that we bring upon ourselves. Struggles that come upon us because of decisions and choices that we've made. Have you ever put yourself in a situation and then asked yourself the question, how did I ever get into this mess? What did I do to get myself here? I mean, we sit down and we examine, okay, what is it that brought me here? Was it, you know, something that God allowed to happen and I didn't make any bad decisions that got me here? Was it something that, you know, I encountered because I was standing for my faith? Or is it something that, you know, I made a bad decision and I'm paying a price for it? You know, when we get to the point of saying, how did I get myself into this mess? Really, it's too late, because wisdom dictates that we see that the choices that we make have a consequence. And we don't want to face the consequence that the individual that we're going to read about tonight does, and that's Samson, who is such a great character in Scripture, and yet one who just fits this question. How did I get myself into this mess? Another individual that, you know, I could picture saying this is Lot in the book of Genesis. Remember, Abraham and Lot's shepherds, they're arguing, they're fighting, you know, over the pasture that is there. And so Abraham and Lot make a wise decision, and that is, we need to separate. And so Lot looks and he chooses the choicest land. He chooses the land that was well watered for himself, and he went there. But what happened? As he moved into that land, eventually he would take steps that would lead him closer and closer to Sodom and to Gomorrah, until finally he's in the city itself. And as he is in the city and is affected by the things of that city, the immorality that is there, can you not hear Lot saying to himself, as he is fleeing with his wife and two of their daughters, as the city of Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the valley are being lit up by fire and brimstone raining down from above, can't you just see him saying to himself, how did I get myself in this mess? I got kids that are still back there that didn't want to leave. And then his wife turns around and she disrespects God's law, turns into a pillar of salt. Like, how did I get myself into this mess? And then eventually, you know, his daughters get him drunk and sexually take advantage of him. I mean, you imagine, how did I get myself into this mess? What about David? When he's there with his child that is born to Bathsheba, wondering, how did he get himself here? And you see what happened in his life, the choices that he made that took these little steps towards a problematic life, these little self-destructive steps. Samson epitomizes this. Samson is, in my view, is one of those characters that you love and you hate all at the same time. Here is a judge of Israel. He was a judge for 20 years. And so he has a position where he could do God good for the people of Israel, for God's people. He has advantages in his life. I want to talk about it. You know, advantages. the guy's good looking. Women are attracted to him. People are attracted to him. He's not only good looking, he has supernatural strength that comes upon him, and he's able to do these wondrous feats. And yet, with all the advantages that he had of position and physical attractiveness and physical strength, Samson's his own worst enemy. Samson implodes in his life. How he does that, I think, epitomizes ways that we can do it. So I want to point out tonight, just quickly, three of the most common ways that we bring trouble into our lives, so that we find ourselves not asking this question, how did I get myself into this mess? Now, the story of Samson starts in chapter 13 of Judges. In chapter 13, we have really the story of his parents, as Manoah and his wife, you know, are told that they're going to have a son. In fact, an angel appears to the wife, and Manoah asks, you know, in prayer that the angel reappear, and so the angel does, and, you know, communicates, okay, you're going to have a son, and this is what you need to do with him. He is going to be a Nazarite from the womb. In other words, he's going to restrain himself from certain things so that he can be dedicated to serving God. And so they're going to offer up a sacrifice unto God. As they offer it up, the angel of the Lord ascends in the flames and the smoke of that fire back up to heaven. Now, when we come to chapter 14, Samson is now old enough to be married. And in chapter 14, he finds a woman of the Philistines who are occupying Israel at this time. He finds a woman of the Philistines to marry. And he is very adamant that's the one he wants to marry. And so some events happened, and Samson gets angry, as we'll see, and he resorts to, acting out against people of Philistia. And then when Samson's bride is given to his friend, Samson gets angry again, and he does more damage to the Philistines. Chapter 16, and we keep on moving down. Like I said, we'll get more specific here. In chapter 16, Samson finds a prostitute that he likes. And we don't know her name, it's just a prostitute, and he has an immoral relationship with her. And then he finds another woman that he likes, and her name is Delilah. Of course, we know the story of how Delilah tricked him into cutting his hair, the source of his strength. At least it was the faith that he would have in God that was then put on trial. And in all of this, these are the three things I want us to see. Number one is, you know, we're asking for trouble in our lives if we refuse to learn from our mistakes. We're asking for trouble if we refuse to learn from our mistakes. There are two areas in Samson's life that he continually found himself a part of that he wouldn't learn from. And so he kept getting himself in trouble over and over and over. The first of these two is his uncontrolled anger, his temper. In Judges chapter 14, beginning in verse 12. In Judges chapter 14, beginning at verse 12, this is when there was a feast for him and this woman that he wants to marry. It says, "And Samson said to them, 'Let me now put a riddle to you. If you could tell me what it is within the 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes. But if you cannot tell me what it is, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothes.' And they said to him, 'Put your riddle to us that we might hear it.' And he said to them, 'Out of the eater came something to eat, out of the strong came something sweet.' And in 3 days they could not solve the riddle. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, 'Entice your husband to tell us what the riddle is, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire.' Had you invited us here to impoverish us? And Samson's wife wept over him and said, you only hate me. You do not love me. You have put a riddle to my people, and you have not told me what it is. And he said to her, behold, I have not told my father nor my mother, and shall I tell you? And she wept before him the 7 days that their feast lasted. And on the seventh day, he told her because she pressed him hard. She told the riddle to her people, and the men of the city said to him on the seventh day, before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lime? And he said to them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have found out my riddle. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and struck down 30 men of the town and took their spoil and gave their garments to those who had took the riddle. In hot anger, he went back to his father's house, and Samson's wife was given to his companion who had been his best man. Here Samson is, and because of the decision he made to give in to the constant crying of his wife, he is not willing to part easily with the garments. He goes down and kills 30 men that had nothing to do with the situation, even though they were Philistines, to go and to get their garments and give it to the people that found a way to come up with the answer to the riddle. And like what he says there in verse 19, in hot anger. I mean, he just didn't do this and said, okay, it's all done. Well, you know, I paid my part. He is steaming mad because of what happened. In chapter 15 and at verse 3, when he finds out his wife has been given to his companion, beginning at verse 3, he says, this time I will be innocent regarding the Philistines. Would I do them harm? So Samson went, caught 300 foxes and took torches, and he turned them tail to tail and put torch between each pair of tails. And when he had set fire to the torches, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and set fire to the stacked grain and the standing grain as well as the olive orchards. He's so angry at what has happened because he didn't fulfill his responsibilities and stay. He went home that he takes 300 foxes, ties them tail to tail, puts torches in their tails, and lets them out. You ever wonder how he did that? How much strength and control and power it would take to be able to do that and to send it out? Yesterday, we had ordered a new dog cage because our dog tore up the old one. So we get this dog cage. This wire dog cage comes in a box from Amazon that's like this. And it's all folded together and the instructions are inside. And the instructions tell you how to unfold it, but you can't get to the instructions, so you have to unfold it to get to the instructions. So here I am, I'm trying to get this cage all apart. And it's like, you know, you have to hold your head a certain way and turn a certain way and hold your breath and all these kinds of things just to get this silly thing to... Seriously, it was frustrating. Because every little wire, the hook would catch on the way out. And it's like three wires on each side. Like, oh. It was difficult to do, challenging. I can't imagine getting that many foxes together and do that. I mean, he is angry. That's why he does that. What's the problem, though? The problem is he doesn't learn from his anger. Anger gets you in trouble. Anger begets more anger in response from others. There's another thing that he had a problem with, and that's his physical desire. Samson liked women. We start in chapter 14. He sees a woman, the Philistines, that he loves, and he tells his dad, Dad, I want her. Go get her for me. And Dad rightly says, Samson, don't you want someone from amongst our own nation? And he says, no, that's the one that I want. Now, interesting little side note, in verse 4 of chapter 14, it says, his father and mother did not know that it was from the Lord, for he was seeking an opportunity against the Philistines. At that time, the Philistines ruled over Israel. Two ways we could look at that. God was allowing Samson to have this relationship with Philistine to be able to do this work, and God allowed it and permitted it without any problem, or God is using Samson's decision, which is what I think it is. Samson says, I want her for me. There's no mention of God except for what the narrator or the writer of the book states. God is taking Samson, something that Samson is doing, and he's using that for his purpose. But this is Samson's desire. When that doesn't work out, he goes and he finds a prostitute. And then he goes and he gives Delilah. And each circumstance presented problem. What did he do? He wanted to get as close as he could to the line so that he can meet his uncontrolled lust. His lust for anger, his physical lust. He said, I can do this without falling. He played a game. He played a game with Delilah. He played a game with his wife, where they kept asking and kept crying for answers. With Delilah, she kept asking, what's the source of your strength? He says, it's this. And then it didn't turn out to be that. And she cries, says, you don't love me. Well, no, it's this. And each time, he'd get a little bit closer, and finally, he told her the truth. He toyed with temptation. See, Samson didn't learn from the mistake of temptation and sin, and so he kept getting closer and closer and closer. I like what one person says about this attitude. He says, one who has a light view of sin never has great thoughts of God. If we have a light view of temptation and what temptation brings, and say, you know what, I can handle this. I can deal with this. You know what happens when we have that attitude? We sin. And then we fool ourselves when we think, you know, next time will be different. No, it won't. There's a reason why we are to run away from temptation. That we're to flee from it, because it's not something to play with. What we're talking about, let's put this in perspective. Temptation happens to all of us. That's a norm. Giving into temptation and sin is not a light matter. And let's put it, in, again, like I said, in perspective. Why is it not a light matter? Because what it costs to redeem us. The precious blood of Jesus, 1 Peter chapter 1 tells us. That's what it costs to redeem us. How can we have this mentality of, well, you know what, it's not that big of a deal. It is a big deal. It's such a big deal that it would cost us our souls eternity in hell. But the blood of Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, redeemed us. How can we treat it as if it's, hey, you know what? It's not that big of a lie. It's not that big of a problem. It's not that big of a deal. It is. And when we find ourselves committing the same kinds of sin over and over and over, we have to learn, you know what? Stay away from it. Stay away from it. The second thing that we can learn from Samson is this, that we're asking for trouble if we choose the wrong associates. Samson chose the wrong people to be around. Look at the women in his life. You have a Philistine, and you have a harlot. And Delilah, we don't really know. Except for the Philistines come and talk with her. Look at that. And then he's around the Philistine people all the time. He's supposed to be the deliverer, and he's playing riddles and games with them. Someone once said that if you want to soar with eagles, you can't run with turkeys. We as God's people are to soar with eagles. But what do we do? Fill our lives with things and people that are bad. Sure, we're to be lights in this world, absolutely. But the danger we face if we are not on guard is that we will allow our light to be dimmed by the effect of those that are around us. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33 says, "Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals." You ever notice those passages that start off with "be not deceived"? Why is it they say that? Well, why is it Paul says that in 1 Corinthians 15? He says it because we are apt to be deceived by ourselves and those that are around us. Don't worry about it. You know, as Scott was talking about, you know, in our homes, the climate in our homes, you know, the deception is, oh, don't worry about it, it's not that big of a deal. But it is a big deal because it affects us. It affects our thinking, and our thinking affects our actions and our beliefs. So the more we expose ourselves to things that are dangerous in their nature, the more our morality will be changed. Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20. So we have to ask questions about our actions, about the environment we place ourselves in, and those that we surround ourselves with. Again, I understand we are to be lights in the world, but there's a difference between being a light in the world and running with the world. Do your friends help you to live 100% for God? Do they build you up? Do they tear you down? 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 14 says, "Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness?" You know, we look at that and say, oh, he's talking about marriage. And yes, there is an aspect that is there that is present about marriage, but it's so much greater than that. What happens if you tie yourself with an unbeliever? You're unequally yoked. You're not going to get anywhere. You know, you tie a strong oxen to a weak oxen. What's going to happen? You're not going to plow straight. You're not going to achieve the desired goal. So in our lives, we have to be careful who we yoke ourselves with. That's why, well, that's one of the reasons why the church is a family. It's a fellowship. Because we have something in common. We have fellowship with God, and because we have fellowship with God, we're able to have fellowship with each other. We know what we're going through as Christians. We understand temptations we face. We might not understand all the same temptations because we might not all face them, but we understand that those who desire to live godly will suffer persecution. We understand that temptation is out there. We understand that we have an enemy. And you know what? We can come together in a harmony and a peace and to know, my brother, understand what I'm going through. And so when brethren come forward and say, you know, I've been struggling a lot, I need prayer to the congregation, we understand. Our goal is to be there for each other, to know that we support each other. Samson chose the wrong associates in his life, and that created problems. And lastly, we're asking for trouble if we refuse to take God seriously. Samson was always doing what Samson wanted to do. He let his desires dictate what he was going to do. And it might be against God's law about a pagan wife. It might be in uncontrolled anger. But he allowed himself to lead the way. Is that us? We don't consult God. We let our emotions, we let our desires lead us. What's remarkable to me is, you know, in chapter 13 all the way through chapter 16, or really chapter 14 with Samson through chapter 16, you don't ever really have Samson interacting with God until you get to the very end of Samson's life. When Samson is tied between two pillars, eyes gouged out, hair cut, starting to grow back, and he's all alone, surrounded by the Philistines. They're mocking him and they're mocking God. It's at that point in his life that he prays to God. How many of us do that? We go and we do it our way, and then as we do it our way, we say, you know what? Because I'm in trouble, now I need God. And we make God an afterthought rather than being our forethought in our mind. The Bible, one of the great things about the Bible is it presents men as they are. Doesn't sugarcoat it. The Bible tells us of people like David who committed adultery and murder. The Bible tells us of people like Lot who make a bad decision and loses his whole family. Tells us about people like Abraham. We can go right down the list. It tells us the good with the bad. And Samson's in that group. When you go through the book of Judges, you see people like Gideon. And yet Gideon still had problems. You see people like Ehud and Deborah. And some of them are great, and we don't really have anything listed that's bad against them, but we know that they're human. See, the reason God does that is because we can identify with them. We can find ourselves in this situation where, you know, we've made mistakes in the past, and we don't learn, we just run right back into them. Or we kid ourselves by saying, you know, the associates that we choose, they don't have an effect on us. Or we might say to ourselves, you know what? I'll think about God at a later time. And we get ourselves into a mess. These things can be avoided. You know, I often wonder, you know, with Samson or really with anyone, what's God think? What's God think when we just find ourselves doing the same thing over and over and over? Because we fail to put him first in our lives. How we got ourselves into messes in our lives, you know, it's one of the big questions that has rather simple answer. We don't take God seriously. There's another way we can look at this question. If we're not a Christian, we're in a mess. We're in a mess. What we have to look forward to is without hope. It's a separation from God for eternity. How did we get into that mess? It's by our sin. How do we get out of that mess? It's through Jesus Christ. Choose him to be your friend. Take God seriously at his word and learn from what you've done in the past and make the change today. If you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, who came to this world, put on the flesh of man, lived a perfect life so that he would go to the cross and shed his precious blood so that we might become a new creation. If that's your belief and you desire to follow Jesus Christ, the way to do that is by repenting of your sins, confessing his name, and by being baptized for the remission of sins. If you need to do that, we stand ready, willing to help you. We invite you to come forward while we stand and sing this song.